Support for this podcast is provided by That Cast Creative. Brand your business and connect with your audience by creating a custom podcast. Learn more at thatcast.com.
Find the growing lineup of That Cast Network podcasts and videocasts at thatcast.com.
Chris Peterson may not come right out and say it as brashly as Rick Neuheisel was doing it in the early 2000s, but you don't think that 70 points at Autzen Stadium 2 years ago was a mistake. I know Oregon's defense was bad, but anybody can tone it down after 55 points. No, that was a message to the fan base in Seattle and throughout the state of Washington that they take this rivalry seriously. I don't know if it's coming through the microphone, but it's only Monday, and I'm kind of jacked up for this game. I'm kind of fired up for this one. And Oregon fans and Washington fans should be as well, because this is, just like it was a couple of weeks ago with Stanford, this is the marquee game in the conference.
That Cast Network presents the No Huddle, an in-depth and fun trip through the 2018 Oregon football season with host Justin Myers.
Welcome back. It's been a while. It is the No Huddle Podcast. I am your host, Justin Myers, and now coming off the bye week, we have got a big Monday show as Oregon and Washington set to square off at Autzen Stadium this week. And I've got lots and lots of thoughts. Some rivalry talk, some talk about Oregon coming off of a bye, and of course some thoughts on Washington and their performance last week against UCLA. And because we took the Friday off for the bye week, we've got some Q&A coming up a little bit later. I've got my Pac-12 power rankings, which, by the way, this conference is an absolute mess. It's a complete mess of a conference. The Pac-12 power rankings are getting more and more difficult. At the beginning of this project, I figured, how hard could it be? You know, I watch all the conference games, just rank the teams 1 through 12. How hard could it be? And then you watch these games, and you have no earthly idea from week to week which team's going to show up and which team's going to play out of their head. So we've got the Pac-12 power rankings coming up. First and foremost, as always, we are a production of the That Cast Network. Find us thatcast.com, or if you get your podcast through iTunes, so subscribe, rate, and review. Spotify, same thing there. We appreciate the feedback. Appreciate all the people that are spreading the word and getting the word out about the No Huddle Podcast. And as I've mentioned, if you like what we do here, tell your friends, tell your family, tell a couple of strangers, and it'll be fantastic. Just two strangers. That's all I ask. Not one, because one, I mean, you could bump into somebody. Tell two strangers. That's making an effort. So let's dive right into this, because it is Washington week. And you know, it's been a long time. I was sitting back and trying to think about this. When the last time the Oregon-Washington game was significant, it's been an incredibly long time, because the last 2 years, and I'm talking about significant from a standpoint of having anything to do with the top of the conference, a significant win in terms of taking control of the Pac-12 North, because that's what you've got today, or this week. This week, the winner of this game, with Stanford's ridiculous loss on the road to Utah, the winner of this game puts them squarely in the driver's seat in the Pac-12 North. Lots of football left to be played, but a significant game between Oregon and Washington, and we haven't seen that in, what, a decade? Maybe more? Yeah, I was going back and kind of rattling through the games. You know, last year, Oregon goes down to Washington on the road, but you remember that was, I think, the third or fourth game without Herbert. They were on their losing streak, and everybody, I think, pretty much had it figured out by then that without Justin Herbert, that Oregon, with Braxton Burmeister as their quarterback, wasn't going up and taking down Washington. And then, of course, the year before that, as we all remember, these 70 points that Washington put on Oregon in a season that, let's be honest, was already lost. You go back before that. Vernon Adams came back, but Oregon had already lost a couple of games, and I think the week before was when Oregon lost the overtime game to Washington State. And there really wasn't anything significant to play for. Also, remember, Washington wasn't anywhere close to a top 10 team like they are now 3 years ago. And then before that, you subsequently get into the 12-game winning streak when Washington was simply trying to compete. Now, you got an Oregon-Washington game that actually means something in the Pac-12 North. We haven't seen this in decades. I mean, actually, 10-plus years since we have seen a game between these two rivals that actually matters in the conference standings, which is very, very significant. The other reason why I think this game is very significant, from Mike Bellotti to Chip Kelly to Mark Helfrich to Willie Taggart, now you've got Mario Cristobal. I have no earthly idea how Mario Cristobal is going to handle the rivalry aspect of this game. Now, of course, as he always does, he's saying all the right things. It's like, I've talked about it with my players. We've acknowledged it. And he's not going to come out in his first game in the Oregon-Washington rivalry and say, no, we take this game seriously. This is a game that means more than anything. He's just not going to say that. But how this team performs in the game, what's the energy level going to be like? How much does this game mean to the Oregon players? Very few who are actually from the state of Oregon, and very few who have actually played in a game like this where it mattered. Like I mentioned, there have been, I think, a handful of times where Oregon and Washington were in the middle of this rivalry and the game actually meant something. I mean, this for a rivalry series, it has been one of the most lopsided rivalry series maybe in all of college football for two teams that truly, truly despise each other. I mean, you go back to the early 90s through the 80s, Washington dominated the rivalry. Oregon got up on them in 94 with, of course, everybody knows Kenny Wheaton's pick. It got to its height when a guy named Rick Neuheisel took over at Washington. And there, around 99, 2000, 2001, there were some significant games in there and some significant venom, some significant hatred for both sides. It was the peak of the rivalry. Then Rick Neuheisel gets fired. Tyron Willingham takes over. Washington becomes a doormat of a program and never fully recovered. And even in bad Oregon seasons, even in 04, when Oregon didn't have a winning record, they still beat Washington. Even in years where Oregon looked like they were down, they still beat Washington, of course, the 12-game win streak. But Mike Bellotti always took the Washington rivalry seriously. And you could tell. You could tell it reflected on the field. It reflected through his players as how important he took the game. And, of course, we all know how Chip Kelly treated rivalry games. He pretended they didn't even exist. That worked for him. I understand the idea of one game doesn't mean more than the other. But to a fan base, and it was very easy for Chip to come out and say that because he never lost to Washington and he never lost to Oregon State. Ask Mark Helfrich if these games matter more. Mark Helfrich got 70 put up on him, then lost an embarrassing game to Oregon State, two rivalry losses, and a week later he was fired. Now, I'm not saying he was fired because he lost those two games. There were many other factors, but you can't tell me that if Oregon would have beaten Oregon State in Civil War that year or competed against Washington, that Rob Mullins, the athletic department, wouldn't have taken a couple of more minutes to reevaluate. It made it real easy to let Mark Helfrich go because those games mean more to the fan base. And the fan base, you guys who I'm talking to, you guys are the consumers. Willie Taggart didn't really have a chance because he was at Oregon for, I don't know, just a couple of months. I don't even know if he ever got unpacked. He treated the Oregon State game very seriously because he had all his horses. He had Herbert ready. He knew he was way better. He had to downplay the Washington game because you're on the road against a top 10 team and you don't have your guy. You didn't have Herbert last year. But now you bring in Mario Cristobal, and I've got to believe that Mario Cristobal is going to buy into this rivalry for a couple of reasons. One, he played at Miami. Miami-Florida State is one of the most competitive, intense rivalries in all of college football. They actually played this weekend. Florida State melted down in the second half, and Florida State fans are letting Willie Taggart have it. But Mario Cristobal played in that rivalry game, that intense rivalry game between the two programs. Wide lefts three different times. And usually the winner of that game had a chance at winning a national title. Then when he was fired at FIU, he went and took a job at Alabama. Alabama and Auburn is one of the greatest rivalries in all of college football. And Nick Saban, by the way, takes that rivalry seriously because he has to. The fan base at Alabama won't allow him. I mean, you can't pull off the Chip Kelly mentality of, no, this game doesn't mean more at a place like Alabama. Chip Kelly could pull it off at Oregon because Oregon fans didn't care as long as you were winning. And Washington and Oregon State made it very, very easy for Chip Kelly to be able to throw that out there, that these games don't matter. So how intense is this game going to be? I think it's going to be very intense. I love a 12:30 kickoff on a Saturday. The weather's going to be perfect. And I think for the first time in the last 2 years, because if Oregon fans were honest, they know the last 2 years they didn't have a shot in this game. And I think Oregon fans are looking at this feeling much, much more confident, especially the way that Justin Herbert plays. And seeing that Washington hasn't had really a significant win. They haven't lost since that opening game to Auburn. But they haven't really pounded anybody except for BYU. BYU, by the way, if you've watched what they've done the last couple of weeks, they're falling apart. So when you look at Washington going up against a team at UCLA that I've ranked very low in my Pac-12 power rankings, and as you know, that's pretty much gospel. You mean you just take my power rankings and put them in the bank. But Washington unable to put away UCLA, unable to put away Arizona State. Browning doesn't look like the top-level, top-tier quarterback in the conference that maybe a lot of people thought he was going to be. Struggling to run the ball with a guy as talented as Myles Gaskin. Relying a lot on their defense. And that's the other thing. I mean, UCLA's offense has been brutal. Has been brutal the last couple of weeks. They were able to move the ball against a team in Washington that's supposed to have, and I think does have, the best defense in the conference. So I think Oregon fans are going to get jacked up for this game because they actually feel like they've got a shot, which they haven't had in the last couple of years. But I'm very, very interested to see how Mario Cristobal handles this with his players. Because to me, there's no in-between. You can't just say, yes, we acknowledge the rivalry, but we're going to play our game. I think you either do what Chip Kelly did, which I'm not a big fan of. It worked for him, but I'm not a big fan of it. Look, I grew up in this rivalry. It matters more to all of us that grew up in the Oregon-Washington rivalry. This game matters more to Oregon fans. And I think it's, if you are a guy that wants to endear yourself to the Oregon fan base, one, win the game. That always helps no matter what. But two, acknowledge that it means more. There's a reason why Washington fans were just completely enamored with Rick Neuheisel. It's because he embraced the rivalry between Oregon and between Washington State. He also won a lot of games. Chris Peterson may not come right out and say it as brashly as Rick Neuheisel was doing it in the early 2000s, but you don't think that 70 points at Autzen Stadium 2 years ago was a mistake. I know Oregon's defense was bad, but anybody can tone it down after 55 points. No, that was a message to the fan base in Seattle and throughout the state of Washington that they take this rivalry seriously. So now you've got Oregon and Washington playing at Autzen Stadium. Oregon fans have got probably more confidence than they've had in the last couple of years going into this game. And the crazy thing is, this one actually means something. Whoever wins this game has an upper hand throughout the rest of the conference for a chance to win the Pac-12 North. Herbert's healthy this year. He's not playing in his first game ever like he was 2 years ago. All indications are that every player that was out versus Cal, even Burmeister, is likely going to be healthy and available when Oregon faces Washington. So the Ducks have got all hands on deck at home. And I don't know how much college kids pay attention to it, but Oregon fans had to have seen what happened with Stanford and have given them new light. Look, the playoff is a pipe dream, okay? The Pac-12, I don't see it. They're not making the playoff. But the conference championship is still up for grabs. And I think Oregon has as good of a shot as anybody in this conference to win the Pac-12 this year. You've got the best player. It took an unfortunate loss to Stanford, but you know what? After their loss at home to Utah, opens the door. So now you got it right in front of you. Here's the top 10 Washington Huskies coming to town. All hands on deck. With a new life in the conference and playing a game in one of the best rivalries on the West Coast that actually has significance. I don't know if it's coming through the microphone, but it's only Monday, and I'm kind of jacked up for this game. I'm kind of fired up for this one. And Oregon fans and Washington fans should be as well, because this is, just like it was a couple of weeks ago with Stanford, this is the marquee game in the conference. It's going to be a lot of eyeballs, because now that Stanford, since the win against Oregon, have dropped two and looked bad doing it, by the way. They looked horrible against Notre Dame, looked terrible against Utah. This is it. This is the ball game. So the top of the conference is at stake, and lots of other layers with this rivalry are coming into it. Normally here on the Monday, we didn't have a game to review or talk about three things we learned. And normally I love doing things in three, but I was just like, it's time to sit and just talk about this. Because this game has not had significance since when? 2001? Is that the last year that the Oregon-Washington game actually had any significance? Where both sides had something at stake? I mean, 2003 was the last year that Oregon lost before the big 12-game win streak. In 2003, Oregon wasn't playing for anything. And now you've got, finally, a game that matters. All right, coming up, I've got my Pac-12 power rankings. The Pac-12 was, it's not a mess, but it's just, you can't make heads or tails of this conference, but I will give it my absolute very best shot. And then I got some Q&A questions and some fun topics to wrap up the show. But the Pac-12 power rankings are coming up next. This is the No Huddle Podcast, as always, a production of the ThatCast Network. Find us on iTunes and Spotify. And also check out and download the other podcasts on the ThatCast Network family. Back for the Pac-12 Power Rankings. No Huddle. I'm Justin Myers. Price Financial Group
Wealth Management. Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you. Simplify. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000.
Want to advertise on this podcast or one like it and reach a targeted and engaged audience? Go to thatcast.com to start reaching our audience.
I'm your host, Justin Myers. Thatcast.com is where you can find us. Also, of course, iTunes and Spotify. It is time for the Pac-12 Power Rankings. That's right. Each and every Monday, after the week, I play a little fun game of shoots and ladders with the top teams with the entire conference and give you what I think is the most accurate ranking of the Pac-12 conference. And let me tell you, it has been a challenge. It has truly been a challenge to try to figure out where to rank these teams. And I'll be perfectly honest. There's one ranking in here I don't feel entirely comfortable about, but I just, for whatever reason, I'm not ready to pull the trigger yet. But let's get right into it. As you guys have probably expected, at number 12, the very bottom, is Oregon State. They lose again. Put up a bit of a fight against Arizona State. Against Washington State at home, but really had no chance of winning that game. Was not competitive, and the Beavs, I think, again, are going to struggle to find a win in the Pac-12. I've mentioned it week after week after week. Their best chances at wins were against Arizona and against Arizona State. They've lost both of those games. Their schedule just gets tougher and tougher, and they go down to Washington State, UCLA, while looking more competitive than we have seen, especially against that Colorado game last week. But Chip Kelly is now 0-5 as they lose at home to Washington. But as I mentioned, it was at least a competitive game. Next up, Cal. Oh, how Cal has fallen. It was just a couple of weeks ago that Cal was undefeated, ranked, Oregon coming to town. Had some problems on offense, but Justin Wilcox had that defense just dialed in. Oregon handles Cal. Arizona takes down Cal, and they've lost now two in a row. I've dropped Cal all the way down to number 10. Number 9, Arizona State, another close loss, but close losses don't get you ranked very high. You've got to find a way to pull off a win against somebody that's not Oregon State. And for Arizona State to play Washington close and to play Colorado close is nice, but it doesn't get you anywhere higher than number 9 in the Pac-12. Arizona with a couple of shots of life. I mean, you look at what Arizona's done the last 3 weeks. I had Arizona right there with Oregon State at the beginning of the season as probably the two worst teams in the conference. And if you look the way they played against BYU and against Houston, and the fact that Khalil Tate, who was like just an absolute one of the best playmakers in all of college football a year ago, wasn't doing anything. But they've turned it around a little bit. In the last 3 weeks, Arizona has beaten Oregon State and were toe-to-toe with USC and then take down Cal. And some big plays on defense. So Arizona takes down Cal. Utah, this is the hard one. Utah's the tough one for me because Utah, I'm not buying in that they're a top tier team in the South Division. But Utah goes into Stanford and smoke shows the Cardinal. And I mentioned there's a team I'm just not quite ready to to pull the trigger on, and that's Stanford. I'll talk about them a little bit later, but you know, Stanford, we keep giving them more and more credit, and I think it's because David Shaw has banked an awful lot of credit. But more on that in just a bit, because I think if I were to criticize this list, I've got Stanford ranked too high. But much like the bad guy in a horror movie, I'm going to make sure they're really, really dead before I move on and sell out Stanford. But Utah, right there above Arizona. Then I got Washington State. Washington State goes to Oregon State, gets a win, gives up a lot more points than I would think you would want to against Oregon State. But the Cougs, couple of bounce back wins after the loss to USC. Trojans right above them. I got USC sitting there in fifth place. And then Stanford is fourth. And as I've mentioned, if you realistically look at what Stanford has done the last 3 weeks, they are 4 inches from being down 31-7 in the third quarter to Oregon and probably getting routed. To their credit, they made big plays. Oregon melted down, and Stanford stole a victory from the Ducks at Autzen Stadium. But let's just play the what-if game. What if Oregon doesn't kick the pylon or doesn't snap the ball over their head? And not only wins, but wins significantly like they were on their way to do it, right? Oregon scores that, and I don't need to tell any of you guys what happens, right, if Oregon scores and goes up 31-7. But combine that with them getting handled by Notre Dame the next week, and then combine that with them getting handled by Utah at home. I mean, I am probably as guilty as everyone else, but could it possibly be that we have just massively overrated Stanford? Because David Shaw has proven that his team has been consistently good year in and year out, but maybe we're just betting on the coach and not taking a look at the team with our eyeballs. So I've got Stanford 4, and I don't feel comfortable with that. But they beat USC, so they've got to win against the Trojans. I can't rank USC ahead of them. Washington State, I probably have too far down. And Washington State is putting up points. Their grad transfer quarterback is I don't think he's going to give Herbert a run for his money for Pac-12 Player of the Year, but he's probably the second best quarterback in the conference. So I've probably got Wazoo ranked too low. I've got Stanford probably ranked too high. But anytime I make a stand on a team, they just completely melt down and make me look foolish. Colorado, close win against Arizona State at home, but the Buffs keep winning, so I keep ranking them high. And as I've mentioned, the Colorado-USC game is going to be very, very significant because I think those are the only two teams. I mean, you look at the South, right? Utah gets the win, but they're not a contender. Arizona State aren't contenders. USC and Colorado is the ball game in the South. So I've got Colorado ranked number 3. I've got Oregon at number 2. And, of course, the Huskies at number 1. They're a top 10 team. They haven't lost since that opening weekend to Auburn. And until you knock the king off the hill, they're going to stay up top. We could see, obviously, a big seismic shift coming up on Saturday. But until Oregon, and as I've mentioned, the one criticism that I think is fair of Justin Herbert and is fair of Oregon, and we see the talent that Oregon has, they haven't beaten anybody yet. They haven't. They've had one quality opponent, and they lost that game. Cal looks worse and worse the last 2 weeks. One of those, Oregon made them look bad, and then Cal goes and loses to Arizona. So Oregon, as much as I think they are as good of a contender for the Pac-12 championship, they haven't beaten anybody yet. That's something that there's a couple of things. There's two things on Justin Herbert's resume that need to be done. It's two things. First and foremost is he needs a significant signature win. He was inches away from having that against Stanford, but he doesn't have a signature win. The second thing is, he needs to win something, right? Player of the Year, Pac-12 North title, bowl game. He's got to get some kind of hardware. I still think Oregon's the second best team. I think it's very close with Washington. I keep ranking Stanford probably too high. I can't pull the trigger on them yet, and I probably got Wazoo a bit underrated if I'm just going to go and give myself a self-critique. But that's how I see the conference. So here we go. Pac-12 power rankings. Washington 1, Oregon sitting at number 2. The Buffaloes, Colorado at 3. Stanford sits at 4. USC at 5. Wazoo at 6. Utah 7. Arizona 8. ASU 9. Cal, They drop the furthest in the power rankings. So Cal sits at 10. UCLA and Oregon State both winless in conference. 11 and 12. This was the hardest thing I've had to do all week. That says something. First off, I had a pretty fun weekend, but the hardest thing I've had to do was to sit and figure out this Pac-12 power ranking, because just when you think I was sold. Washington, Oregon, Stanford, top tier teams. Probably Colorado in there solely because they play in the South. Then second tier teams being, Utah, Washington State, Cal. Washington State looks like they're more of a top tier team than Stanford is as we sit right now. And of course, the more and more confidence they gain, that looks like a tougher and tougher game for Oregon coming up in a couple of weeks when they go to Pullman to take on the Cougs. But I think it's a clear separation, and it's probably a little biased because I'm so pumped for this Oregon-Washington game, but Oregon and Washington, the last couple of weeks, and if you look at like the entire body of work, and I hate saying that, but the entire body of work of the season, they have frustrating losses, but they don't have the embarrassing losses that Stanford and USC and, quite frankly, Washington State doesn't really have an embarrassing loss, but that Friday night game is one that was probably frustrating. So there you go. There's your Pac-12 power rankings. Coming up next, we've got the Q&A. Fun topic. We're going to talk some old school Oregon football in the Q&A as we do a top five ranking. You won't want to miss it. That's going to be coming up to wrap up the big Monday show. This is the No Huddle Podcast, as always, a production of the ThatCast Podcast Network. Back to wrap it up in just a bit. I'm Justin Myers.
Find the growing lineup of ThatCast Network podcasts and videocasts at ThatCast.com. Now, back to Justin Myers and the No Huddle.
All right, final segment here on a Monday. This is the No Huddle Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Myers, ThatCast Podcast Network. And normally, we do the Q&A on Fridays, but just a quick heads up, because of some scheduling issues and some time constraints, we are going to be doing the No Huddle Podcast just once a week going forward. So we're going to try to take all the fun stuff that we were doing on Mondays and on Fridays and just combine the two, just because there are some things that are, and if you live in the Portland area, you may have noticed there's been some added things to my schedule, broadcasting wise. So just for time reasons, we're still going to be doing the No Huddle. We're still going to finish out this season. We're still going to have some fun going forward after that, talking Oregon football and doing back and forth with you guys. But we are going to scale it back and just do the Monday show, and we'll be able to react to games, look forward to the next week, and also, of course, get into the Pac-12 power rankings and still do some fun stuff like the Q&A that we've got dialed up here. So first things first, early Q&A. What's a better tailgate food, wings or ribs? Oh, this is a great question. It's a great question. And I'll tell you what, I love ribs. I absolutely love ribs. But the reason why wings are a better tailgate food is because ribs, if they are not cooked properly, can be awful. There is such a fine line. And at the tailgate, you're not in, you know, you got to have a home field advantage if you were going to make proper ribs, right? And I know people that boil them first, or some people start them in the oven and then finish them on the grill, or you throw them out on your smoker or whatever you do. But ribs, they take so long, and you've got to have a home field advantage just to be able to get them done right, because ribs done right are unbelievable. Ribs done poorly are tough. They're chewy. They're no fun. And it just makes you wish you never did it in the first place. Wings, on the other hand, if you've got your grill out at your tailgate, it's hard to screw up chicken wings. You can either go with separate dipping sauces. You can throw them on the grill with the sauce to bake it in. Either way, you can do wings in a parking lot, right? At the parking lot with adverse conditions. To do ribs properly, you've got to have the familiarity of the home field. And I just don't know if there is look, if you're super rich and you got one of those super big coaches, those big RVs, and you want to do ribs, by all means, you want to go out there the night before too. Ribs need to be smoked for a long, long time to be done right. Chicken wings, you marinate them, you season them well, you throw them on the grill, you don't overcook them, and everybody's having a great time. Ribs is walking a tightrope. It really is. It's weeding into some dangerous territory in maybe not the most friendly conditions. Plus, I think ribs have to be done well, you got to smoke them. And I know they've got portable smokers now, and you could make that happen, but it's got to be done at home. You can't do them on a propane grill. So I'm going wings in terms of they tailgate food. Now, you want to go backyard cookout food, I'm going ribs all day. But in terms of being at the tailgate, you got to remember just the cooking space, it's got to be portable. And I just don't think ribs aren't going to adhere to that all that well. All right, my good friend Jeff Smith threw out this challenge to me. And this is, by the way, this was hard. And I'm reserving my right to re-evaluate this list that I'm about ready to throw out. But this was just kind of top of mind, throwing some things out. And I'm sure I may have missed some people. And I'm going to throw this out on Twitter, too. So if anybody out there who doesn't follow me, Justin Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, the proper way to spell my name, 541. Why the 541? Because I rep Southern Oregon all day, every day. But I'm going to throw it out on Twitter. But my good friend Jeff wanted to know who are the top five in-state Oregon football players. First and foremost, I'm eliminating current players. Justin Herbert may very well be on this list when it's all said and done, but I want to know his entire career before I can evaluate him with the rest of the top five and the honorable mentions. So you got to get an entire career under your belt before you can be eligible for this list. So I'm eliminating Herbert. Plus, it just helps me out because I probably would have put him at number one. And also, I'm looking for, a lot of times in this list, it's like what these guys did in the NFL or their pro career after. I'm looking for a significant performance at Oregon. I'm not eliminating the fact that they were NFL caliber or that they played in the league, but I'm not evaluating whoever makes this list solely on that. And third, and this one is just to kind of protect myself, I'm 39 years old. My age is a factor. There's a lot of players that I did not ever get to see play, and I'm sure I missed some of the old timers. But this is just my list of guys that I watched play from the state of Oregon. So here we go. Top five in-state players from the state of Oregon who played at the University of Oregon. Number one, shouldn't be a surprise. He should be number one on everybody's list, and that's Joey Harrington. Back-to-back Pac-12 championships. Number two ranking overall. Made it to New York for the Heisman Trophy presentation. Top three pick in the NFL draft. So on and so forth. Out of Central Catholic, you've got Joey Harrington. He's number one on the list. He should be, as I mentioned, number one on everybody's list. Number two, going Josh Wilcox, Junction City High School, Junction City, Oregon. Starting tight end as a freshman for the Rose Bowl year. Held Rose Bowl record for receptions and yards. Tremendous career. As a tight end, and really kind of paved the way for a ton of great productive tight ends behind him. And yeah, there were some guys ahead of him too, but in-state guy, Josh Wilcox, he's number two on the list. Number three on the list, out of Ashland High School, Southern Oregon, Chad Cota. Chad Cota on the defensive side of the ball, of course, played a significant amount of time in the NFL, but I got Chad Cota on my list. Number four, out of Dayton High School, Dante Rosario. And I threw Dante Rosario in there for a couple of reasons. One is, much like when people ask you, what's your favorite Saturday Night Live cast? It's always the one when you were in high school, right? You just go ask anybody, what's your favorite SNL cast? And you just say, well, it was Sandler and Spade and Norm Macdonald, because that was when I was in high school. And I was putting together this list, and sure enough, they were all from the mid-90s. A lot of gangrene, a lot of Rose Bowl, mid-90s. And so I'm trying to throw in some players. And of course, Dante Rosario, very versatile. Remember, he started as a fullback. Then Oregon went to the spread in 2005. And they didn't even really have a fullback. So then he became an H-back, but was still productive. Gets to the NFL, had a significant career later on in the NFL. But I just loved his versatility from Dayton High School. Also got to get some 2A love, right? Big high school in Central Catholic for Joey Harrington. Of course, big high school for Chad Cota, Ashland. 3A, Josh Wilcox. Get some 2A love for Dante Rosario. He's a Dayton Pirate. And then finally, and I'll fully admit this one is extremely biased, but also I back it up with some facts, but my fellow Douglas Trojan, my fellow redhead punter, Josh Bidwell. He's a Pro Bowler in the league as a punter. Significant career with the Packers and then with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was an all-conference punter in his time at Oregon. Academic All-American. And he's from my high school, and I get to pick the list, so I'm going Josh Bidwell. And everybody else that has a problem with that, well, can take it up with me. I'm sure there are plenty, plenty that I missed. This is by no means a set-in-stone list. Find me on Twitter. Hit me up with your top five. I'll throw out some stuff a little bit later today, and I'm sure this debate and discussion is going to get out of control. There are plenty, plenty of guys. And, you know, you got Chris Miller, Kellen Clemens. I know that injuries kind of derailed his career. I always wondered what would have happened if Thomas Tyner would have stayed healthy. I mean, so many great. And, of course, Dave Wilcox, Josh and Justin's father, who played at Oregon from Vail, who went on to be an NFL Hall of Famer. I just never saw the guy play. So lots and lots of other names to be thrown in there and to be discussed. And we will look forward to continuing this discussion on social media. Okay, there it is. You are locked and loaded and you are ready. I feel like I have fully prepared you for Washington week. It is time to embrace the rivalry again. It is a significant game, one of the very, very few that happened in this rivalry. I'm hoping that Cristobal behind the scenes is selling that to this team, that this game means more. It just does. The Oregon-Washington game is significant, it's important, and this game means more. And if they don't know it by now, I'm sure after the game, they will have it figured out. Autzen is going to be an unbelievable atmosphere. I'll be there. I'm fired up, ready to come back here on Monday and wrap the whole thing up. Thanks again for all of you that have listened to the show and for spreading the word of what we are doing here. Next time I will talk to you will be on Monday. Have a great week, everybody. This is the No Huddle Podcast, part of the ThatCast Podcast Network. And, of course, check out Spotify, iTunes, rate and review, rate and review, rate and review. Talk to you on Monday, everybody. Have a great week. I'm Justin Myers.
Find the growing lineup of ThatCast Network podcasts and videocasts at ThatCast.com.